And this is the Bill Myers Show.
I was speaking earlier this hour about how many of the problems that we're dealing with social issues here in Southern Oregon, dealing with addiction and recovery. And it's a huge business here, too. And I wanted to talk with Mark W. Sheeran. He's the co-founder of Baldwin Research Institute and St. Jude Retreats. He's the author of a brand new book, The Freedom Model for Addictions, Escape the Treatment and Recovery Trap. And before I bring Mark on, let me tell you a little more about him. He is the only addictions researcher in the entire world to have studied individuals with substance abuse issues. And he did this by living with these study subjects for about the last 12 years. So if there's anybody, he's probably forgotten more about addiction recovery than I'll ever know. Mark, we appreciate you coming on. How are you doing this morning, sir?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Mark, earlier this hour, and I also shared this with you, that I was at a big nonprofit dinner one time, and they were raising money. They get everybody drunk, and then we write checks out to you know, nonprofit groups around here, and one of them was a women's shelter, and they had the sob story video. And it was a tough thing, and woman was in good shape now. But I'll always remember this one part of the video in which she said, and I was doing okay, but then one day I tested positive for meth. My wife and I are looking at one another and said, wait a minute, you don't catch methamphetamine in the women's shelter. You just don't. That's just not the way it is. There's some action that you end up having taken to do this. But conventional addiction recovery doesn't look at it that way because they call addiction a disease. That's how I hear it talked about. Would you agree with me there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Almost all the treatment industry is based on this erroneous idea that it's a disease. There's a reason for that. You know, it's big business, and it's a black and white answer for a complicated problem. And it's easier to tell somebody and fear them into acquiescing to the treatment modality by just saying, hey, you have a disease, you're going to have it forever, it's going to be a battle forever, and you need us to help you through that. And it's easy to believe, because at the time that you're seeking help, you feel hopeless. You could almost feel diseased. I know, because I lived through it myself.
Oh, you did? Okay, so this is good to know then. So what kind of addiction did you have, if you don't mind me getting too personal?
No, I'm an open book. I'm all over the web with this stuff. I was a drinker, but I also did a tremendous amount of drugs. I was young. I started Baldwin Research actually when I was 19. I lived with my study subjects for the first 12 years, and I've been doing the follow-up studies for the last 20. So this is a 31-year effort. But I went through the treatment industry. I was mandated to treatment after I almost killed some people drunk driving when I was 19. And I went to treatment, and I had a terrible experience in treatment. And I said, at 19, I'm going to make a better model for people. And that's what I did. That's how I became a researcher.
Okay. Yeah, well, it's really interesting. So would it be fair to say that the addiction recovery industry is not all that different from the pharmaceutical model? And when I say that, follow along with me. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that when it comes to making money, or at least when I see drugs that are advertised all over cable shows and on television all the time, it's never about curing you. There's never a cure. There's always about, here is how you can manage your fill in the blank, whatever the disease is. And I'm wondering if that's the same model then that addiction and recovery tends to work with.
Oh, absolutely. The idea of recovery, we call, if you notice on the cover of the book, it's called Escape the Addiction and Treatment and Recovery Trap. Mm-hmm. Recovery is a trap just as much as addiction. It's the flip side of the same coin. You're never, in the disease model, you're never allowed to be normal. You're always going to be in need of recovery. And that's simply not true. If you look at the largest studies conducted, and these studies, they're out there for people to look at, but they've been completely ignored by the industry. We have the NESARC study with 43,000 people, a longitudinal study, and they found that basically, everybody gets over addiction when you factor in time. In other words, as we get older, we stop being addicted. We either moderate or stop, whether we're treated or not. And we're talking 91% of drinkers get over their problem as a function of age, 97% of marijuana users, 99.2% of cocaine users.
Wow.
So this is like the hidden truth that I looked at. And these are massive studies that were done for decades. So that's ignored. It's completely ignored that people move on, whether they're treated or not. And that basically takes the entire disease model and throws it on its face.
Yeah, because if it's a disease model and people age out of those issues, then what is it really that was driving it? Because it would seem to me that if it's truly a disease, you have absolutely no control and no one can do anything about it.
That's right. And the trend line would go the opposite way. As we get older with diseases, diseases get more powerful in our lives and more common. So this has the exact opposite trend line. And all of that is covered in the Freedom Model book that we published.
Yeah, by the way, the book is The Freedom Model for Addictions, Escape the Treatment and Recovery Trap. And we're dealing with a lot of opioid addictions here in Southern Oregon, even still at this point, methamphetamine. It's a tough one. And a lot of our homeless tend to be suffering from this, too. And it's just kind of part of the deal. So what is the difference when, okay, you have the addiction is a disease issue about it, and then you're saying you don't want a lifelong diagnosis and you want to go a different way. So what is the model that you've ended up coming up with, which is different than the addiction as a disease?
Yeah, well, first of all, the model itself, the Freedom Model, is predicated on the idea that we have to sweep away a lot of the mythology that you've been taught.
Okay.
And so we have to debunk the disease concept so that you can actually see that you prefer your habit. And that's hard for people because they've been given the excuse of a disease to be able to continue their behavior. We take that excuse away. And we say, you know, this is something that at some level you still enjoy. Even the homeless guy banging heroin all day long is he believes it's necessary for his happiness to do that. And what we do is we challenge that benefit. And then we say, there's probably better ways of being happy. Now, that's simplified. We're talking about a 450-page book that goes through this process. A lot of it is debunking the things that make you distracted from yourself and making better choices. So we have to get rid of the mythology, and then it's understanding that we really are capable. We have free will. You're not diseased. You're not broken. And even if you have physical withdrawal, that's not disease. That's toxicity. You've poisoned yourself, and you just go to detox, and you get over that.
All right. I just want to make sure that we're clear about that then. So there is physical addiction. You're not going
sure.
to question that part about it. But to actually consider physical addiction a disease is still taking the responsibility away from the person then.
Oh, right? Absolutely. Absolutely. The only way you can take a dose of drugs is by deciding to do that. And, you know, what other – do you get cancer on payday, and then when the money runs out, the cancer goes away? I mean, this disease idea is really absurd. But if you believe it, like I did when I went to treatment, I didn't know any better, it's devastating because you think at first there's an attractiveness to it, and that is, oh, I have an excuse. But within a very short period of time, that excuse runs dry, and you're thinking to yourself, I got this forever? Really? And that didn't make sense to me because I had already stopped when I went to treatment because I was mandated. And I started asking questions and I realized they didn't have answers. I started saying, how is it a disease? How is it like cancer? And they couldn't answer. And then I said, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. And I became a researcher that day. I said, I'm going to find out.
Would it be unkind to say that a lot of addiction recovery is a racket because there's so much government money going to it?
Yeah, I would say so. I don't think there's a diabolical sort of puppeteer at the top, you know, making this happen. I think it's a $36 billion a year industry in the United States alone that has millions of people invested in their livelihood. And we're 80 years from the beginning of the disease concept being born in 1935. So we're generations deep into this. It's become a religion. Addiction and recovery are American religions. They're belief systems that we believe without fact, and we have faith in them, and we have faith in the faith healers, which is the treatment industry. And now we have the pharmaceutical companies joining the bandwagon with methadone, Suboxone, and replacement therapy, which is just basically heroin light. And, you know, so it's a massive, massive industry keeping people sick.
Mark, something tells me that you are quite the heretic and likely not welcome within the industry circles. How is that working out for you to actually say, hey, you know, you're not really helping by calling addiction a disease? What do they say to you?
Oh, well, in the early years, it was brutal. They came after me personally, and they tried to literally destroy my business with slander and those sorts of things. But today I'm respected, and nobody wants to debate this because they know I have the facts on my side. So they remain quiet, and we coexist. And I'm just here to help people. I mean, that's what it comes down to. I know what it's like to be in treatment, feel hopeless, devastated by the message that I would never be okay. And I'm here to tell people that absolutely I've helped over 9,000 people over the last 30 years move on with their lives, me and my team. I have a wonderful team of researchers, mm-hmm. Stephen Slate, Michelle Dunbar, and you know, they can move past this. So, yeah, I'm not liked by treatment circles for sure, but we coexist.
I'm glad to hear an alternative view of what's going on here and to be able to back this up. By the way, Mark W. Sheeran, once again, co-founder of Baldwin Research Institute. This has been like a 30-year project, 30-year plus. And his book out about this is The Freedom Model for Addictions, Escape the Treatment and Recovery Trap. Going back to the disease, I can think of one example, just one person that I knew personally for a number of years. And she was a raging alcoholic.
Yep. Yep.
And then she ended up quitting, and she didn't have any treatment per se. She just didn't drink. She got away from it for a while. And I now know that she occasionally has a beer right now without too much effect, and just things seem to be just fine with her. And she says, well, I have it under control. I rarely have an occasional beer or something, you know, socially with people. But then that's it.
Sure.
And I was even thinking then, wait a minute, I thought if you're an alcoholic, for life, you have a disease. And so that's sort of an example of what you're speaking of, right?
Now,
I was just thinking this is one person, well, it's a one-off. Is there more control over this than you think?
Well, yeah. When we look at those statistics with NESARC, about 50% of past what would be considered alcoholics moderate. I moderate. I drink occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
So does Steven. So does Michelle. So does my entire team. You know, once you know that there's no disease rendering you powerless, then it's just a decision of whether you want the benefits of moderate use over abstinence or heavy use. And you're just making choices like you would with any other situation. And that's when you know you've gotten over the problem, when you see this problem as no different than making any other difficult choice in your life. But getting there is the challenge, which is why we wrote the book.
All right. And is part of this just literally relearning different habits? Is that part of the process?
Yep. It's knowledge coupled with a new way of moving on. Moving on is really how you get over a problem. And you're not moving on to get away from the drugs. You're moving on simply to move on. But the only way to get there is to be educated on the truth first. I have to always say that because there's so much mythology in American culture on this topic. You have to parse it out and get rid of that nonsense first.
Is part of the challenge of that nonsense, as you term it, Mark, that the culture seems to almost be praising people who have gotten miserably addicted and just drug out and then, oh, I have recovered. It's like, oh, you're so strong or you're so brave to talk about that. And I'm thinking to myself, what about all the people that were kind of bright enough or you figured it out that maybe it wasn't a good thing to do in the first place? And I don't mean to be unkind, but I'm wondering if part of that is that. Is that issue?
Oh, yeah. That's another one of those incentives that we were talking about earlier is there's a crass term for it called junkie pride, you know, where you get over the problem and you get a trophy for something that actually, when you understand the facts, is just a decision like any other. But in the recovery world, I mean, they give out prizes. You know, you get your 30-day chip. You get at time is a trophy because they frame it as a battle, right? There's a battle. There's something you're trying to battle. The substance has a will of its own that's pitted against you. And that sort of religious strangeness is what keeps people trapped. It really is. And if you frame it as a battle, it becomes a battle. If you frame it as, you know, I made some choices in the pursuit of happiness, and it's not really making me happy anymore, and I need to really look at this. That's the natural way people get over a substance use problem, is challenging whether they're really happy doing it or not.
Mark, you talked about and just mentioned how the addiction disease has become a faith, an article of faith, like a religion, America's religion today, is getting past these addictions and coming up with different habits and more positive way of looking at world. Does sometimes a spiritual component enter people's lives? Is it helpful for them?
Well, I think we didn't address that in the book because we found that there was no correlation between actual religiosity, faith, and getting over the problem. But for the people, there are people who I'm religious, as an example. You know, I have faith. So it was a component for me because I have a dialogue with Christianity, with God. But for people that don't have that, there doesn't seem to be any less of a chance to move on because of this fact alone. There are two motivations within the human being that are universal, whether you believe or not, and that's free will and the positive drive principle, or this idea that we're always moving in the direction of happiness, trying to be happier people. And I think whether if you're religious, you believe God gave you that. If you're not, you don't believe that. But you both have it. So I, as a researcher, when I wrote the book, I looked at the commonalities within the human race and said, what is it that motivates people? And that's the pursuit of happiness and our ability to choose.
If you were to look at the battle between your view of addiction and recovery and getting past this and improving people's lives and the current model of addiction as a disease, what would cheer you? What would you like to see, or what are you working for over, let's say, the next 30, 40, 50 years in changes that we could observe? Even one or two or three different things we should be doing within the court addiction system right now, because that's where a lot of people first get their push to, hey, you got to figure this out. This is not working for you.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think number one is if you have a premise that's false, everything downstream, all the solutions become infected by the wrongness of that premise. And the premise that's literally killing people needlessly is this disease ideal. So I would debate publicly, you know, whether the disease exists or not, because every single policy that exists today in government that controls people takes away their rights. My rights were taken away when I was mandated to treatment. It happens every day. You can be Baker Acted against your will. You know, you can be institutionalized like we're in a communist country. All those policies exist based on the loss of control ideal, based on the disease concept, which is wrong. It's simply not true. So I think that we have to kill the premise, this idea that we have no control over our behaviors. And when that is reversed, all the stuff downstream will straighten out.
We're looking at a situation right now where government is not able to, is likely not going to be able to keep a lot of its current obligations or promises. And that would include a lot of the addiction treatments that we have right now, just because governments are indebted. And we're just looking kind of at the end of bubble time. You know, it's sort of the way I'm looking at it. And so there's probably going to have to be a different model. And is there a possibility that insolvency may force governments to look at your model? Because, you know, the whole idea that we're going to keep you on a treatment for the rest of your life is probably not going to be affordable. Just thinking.
I think that's absolutely going to happen. All things come to light in time, right? I think we're going to look back 100 years from now and call this the addiction age. You know, we had the golden age, we had the industrial era, you know? And I think that we're going to look at this where we, as a culture, we victimized our youth by telling them they're fragile, diseased people. And it's not true. We're incredibly resilient creatures. We're very smart. And so there's going to be a revolution of truth that happens. And the beauty is the facts speak for themselves. People get over this problem without treatment, by and large, all the time.
What about the 9%? You talked about 91% of alcoholics or drinkers end up just sort of aging out of some of that. What about the 9% that don't? What?
They like it. They like it. I mean, there's always been in every population across the world for a millennia, there's been a group of people, usually about 5% of the population, that likes getting hammered more than any other activity. It is their preference. And there's nothing that's going to stop that person from getting high or drunk. They like it that much. And as far as I'm concerned, you're free to live your life how you want to live it. You know, I was a boxer for years and people would say, my God, Mark, you're getting bashed in the head. Isn't that crazy and risky? I said, yeah, there are a lot of things that are risky in life, but we still do them. Doesn't mean it's a disease. Doesn't mean I'm powerless over it, certainly. Yeah. You know, I choose it. And this is risky behavior that people choose. And some people like that lifestyle. They really do. And that's okay with me.
Well, I appreciate you not being hit in the head so often that you couldn't write the book. Okay. I want to get a copy of this. I really do. And this is available on Amazon, various other things. I'd like to find out more about this because you really cut against the conventional grain. And I think we need that kind of talk right now. And it's available on Amazon, all the usual suspects, Mark. Just want to make sure.
Yep. And you can go to thefreedommodel.org. You can learn about all the different ways we teach this. Mm-hmm. And the phone number is 888-424-2626.
Mark W. Sharon, co-founder of the Baldwin Research Institute and St. Jude Retreats, in his latest book, The Freedom Model for Addictions, Escape the Treatment and Recovery Trap. I'll get the information up on KMED.com. Mark, good meeting you. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Take care.